meeting, which we will be led by the content advisors, Dr. Manenje, as well as Mam Bashe, who will present the committee report. Then, having concluded on that, we will then see if there's any comments or questions of clarity. We will then proceed to adopt the report, honorable members. Let me therefore welcome our staff, the secretariat, as well as the content advisors, our researchers, as well as the logistics and the other staff complement we have in the committee that assists us in navigating through these virtual meetings, and also able to assist us in capturing our meetings that we have on a daily basis. We are grateful to have them on board, and I would like to convey the committee's condolences to the passing of the Deputy Minister, Honorable Thapa's brother, who's the brother-in-law to the Honorable Thapa, a member of the committee. And let us also take this opportunity, honorable members, to convey our condolences to all those who've lost loved ones, particularly to the COVID pandemic, as we continue battling and trying to find our ways. We must convey a message to all South Africans to continue to wearing their masks and sanitizing, and adhering to social distance at all times. This pandemic is proving to be escalating during this festive season we'll be entering to. There has been analysis reports that are expecting a fourth wave to kick in. So we want to remind South Africans and honorable members to please stay safe, and encourage you all to go and vaccinate. I'm one of those that have been able to get my two jabs, and all of us must stay safe than sorry. With that said, honorable members, let me welcome our content advisors, Dr. Manenze, as well as Mam Bashe, to take us through the PRRR report. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. We have the report in front of us here, which we would like to take the committee through. What we are proposing through you, Chairperson, is that we do not read word for word, but we just highlight what particular sections are about, and maybe if there are some issues, we reflect on them, but spend time in discussing the committee recommendations, because we feel like that's where the committee might want to spend time discussing and reflecting the issues that have been recorded there. If it's okay, Chairperson, I'll move on. So on the first page, what you'd have there is the introduction. To say that myself and Ms. Mkhaitse will actually work interchangeably. She will be taking some of the sections. So in the introduction, really, it's introducing the report, what it is all about, and under what legislative framework we table or submit this report. That table is an indication of all the entities that appeared before the committee and the dates by which they appeared. So you can see here we introduce the mandate of this committee and what the committee oversees. That is the Department of Agricultural and Reform and Rural Development, and the entities that report under this budget or this vote. So what we are doing really is a review of the budget and make recommendations, and that's being done on the basis of consideration of the annual report. So you see that there is a focus on service delivery performance, effectiveness and efficiency, and then we also make recommendations about the use of resources. So this section really takes you through the list of all those entities that spoke, that appeared before the committee, but also in analysis, we also draw on other work that the committee has done throughout the year, just like oversight visits and the quarterly report and the various engagements that the committee had throughout the year. Section 2 gives a policy focus areas, mainly really grounding the discussion in the National Development Plan. So we're not going to bore you about what National Development Plan is and what it says. These are issues that we know. And in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, 2019 to 2024, this really guides the implementation of various government departments. And specifically for this department, the key areas that it contributes to, and those are the priority areas. There are about 5 of them. I'm not going to read through those. So we now here show the report, the constitutional basis for the work that this department does. For instance, Section 24 about environment and natural resources management, resources, and 27(1)(b) food and water, and Section 25 about the framework for land reform, and 27 dealing with healthcare, food, water, social security. So if you look at the work that is being done under this department, it goes back, it's grounded, it's founded on these particular sections and other sections, perhaps these are the main ones. In this table, we show the alignment of the department, the outcomes of the department, and the 2020-24 priorities that I've mentioned about. So let's not waste time there. And the department is organized into 6 programs. I think is important to note because our report will be actually going into these sections and speak about administration in program 1, program 2, these long name of the program, which deals with agricultural production, health, food safety, natural resources and disaster management. 3, I mean, we know these programs. So it's land reform, food security restitution, rural development program 4, program 5, economic development, trade and marketing, and land administration. Let me not even go there. But yes, these are the programs that we will be reporting on. Key policy areas. So I'm hoping that as I'm going through and members can also scan through and see if there's anything that we have missed as well. So I'll try not to go too fast. Yes, I'm wondering if Ms. Ngashe will take over from here. If she's fine, I'll proceed. Just indicate and okay, I'll proceed. Okay. All right. Thanks. Right. So this is an overview of the allocation and the budget allocation and the expenditure. We have a discussion of those expenditures, but they are whatever that is discussed there is captured in this table that shows in under the administration how much was the appropriation, for instance, the 2.8 billion there, and how it was involving all the shifts and vermins. And the final appropriation and the actual expenditure and what is left or or the variance thereof. So you will see. Let me not spend time there. You you can see even the breakdown within each program, the expenditures, just to note there in terms of the final expenditures, the percentage under administration, you can see it's 100%. This information was presented by the department. So yes, it's you can also see economic development, trade and marketing at 82.1%. Yes, and here we make note about irregular expenditure of about 203.8 million, and the committee was informed that this is historic because of mainly because of non-compliance with supply chain management, but also issues of overpayment with regard to recap. So the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, about 44 million, again, a historic matter. And the department and the auditor general or the department as well reported about the payment of these vet mobile clinics, but these were never delivered. So in terms of financial performance for 2020-21, Ms. Mkaisha, this is where you take over.
Thank you, Dr. Manenje, and good morning, members and colleagues. As members will recall from the presentation, Program 1 spent 100% of its budget, but didn't achieve, I think, the targets that we sent, the two targets. Program 2, the program with a long name, as Dr. Manenje has indicated, so I think we'll just call it Program 2. This program deals with protection, health, that is animal disease, surveillances, natural resources, and disaster management, and also food safety issues. This program spent 95.7% of the almost 3 billion budget that it was allocated in the past year. Most of the expenditure of about 44% went to the Agricultural Research Council and also to inspection and quarantine services sub-program. The program most significant under expenditure was in the compensation of employees, particularly in the animal production health sub-program. And members will note that the under expenditure in terms of compensation of employees is common across all programs. Program 3 is food security and land reform. So I will just talk about the food security sub-program in this regard. The program also received the largest appropriation of 6.8 approximately billion from the vote, with a restitution sub-program and the food security sub-program accounting for more than 2/3 of the appropriation. This program, the spend wasn't particularly great because the program only spent 87%, and this was due to an amount of approximately 851.8 million that was not spent. And this was in the food security sub-program. Most of this under expenditure, as members will remember, was in respect of the Presidential Employment Stimulus Initiative that was meant for assisting distressed subsistence farmers that were affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, due to the delayed processes of verification by the department, the farmers were eventually issued with vouchers in the new financial year. So the target was not met, or the money was not spent during the financial year under review. The rural development program received 725 million and spent most of the allocated expenditure, with the final expenditure being almost 99%, with just 1.4% under expenditure. Program 5 That's economic development, trade and marketing. The program all spent 82% of the appropriated expenditure, and most of the allocation to the program went to the agro-processing, marketing and rural industrial development sub-program. And that's also the sub-program that also had the most under expenditure of 18%. Also, in respect of compensation of employees. The land administration program, that's programs which deals with geospatial information, cadastral surveys, diesel registration, and spatial planning. The program spent approximately 95% of the 1 billion allocation that it was appropriated to past financial year. This section I will not go into detail. It's just it's entailed in the annual report. It's the report of the independent audit committee. However, and these are some of the deficiencies, control deficiencies that the audit committee of the department has highlighted. ICT, I think this was also raised previously by the AG because of poor records management, and also compliance, contract management, property management, including the management of fraud, corruption, misconduct, etc. Those are some of the key issues that were identified by the COVID committee. Can you go up a little bit? Thank you. That by the department's independent committee. And what the committee expressed as serious concern was inadequate internal control structures, which are important in the prevention and detection of fraud in the department. And the committee also expressed concern with the in-year monitoring and reporting in respect of progress in for planned performance targets. The internal control issues were also raised repeatedly by the AG, and the in-year monitoring has also been raised by the committee, so it's still a challenge. The AG, the committee, I won't go into detail on this one also because the committee was also briefed by the Auditor General. The department overall received an unqualified audit opinion when you talk about the new department. However, the she highlighted that the forestry function, which used to be in the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, again did receive a qualified opinion. That's how the former DAF received qualification in the past two financial years prior to 2020-21, and that's still the case. However, this currently doesn't impact the department in the sense that the forestry function has been transferred to the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment. So that department now has to deal with the qualification. And the members also raised an issue with that. The emphasis of matters in terms of finding, the AG wanted the committee to note the significant uncertainties and impairments, and these are in respect of 1 billion worth of claims, legal claims that have been instituted against the department, and also impairments in terms of accrued revenue and receivables. One of the key issues members will note, this is also the challenge across the portfolio with most of the entities is non-compliance with the PFMA. That is in terms of expenditure management, where steps are not taken to prevent irregular and fruitless expenditure. The payments, that's a part of supply chain that are not made within 30 days. Procurement and contract management, that's also a supply chain management contravention where some of the invitations for bidding were not advertised. I think this was more prevalent in the COVID-19 fund implementation, and also where some of the bid documents did not stipulate the minimum threshold for production and in terms of local procurement. Consequence management is a big challenge with the department still. Disciplinary steps were not taken against officials who had incurred or permitted irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure as required by the PFMA. This is an ongoing challenge. And lastly, usefulness and reliability. We have included this because it's also a repeat finding, particularly in terms of program tree. Members will remember that program tree also transfers conditional grants in terms of CASP, Ilimalitsima, and Lenkete provinces. So there's always been challenges in terms of usefulness and reliability of reported information. However, in the year under review, the misstatements that were identified by AG were subsequently corrected. So the AG did not raise any findings further on this program. But I think we've included it because it has been a challenge before and it's linked to weak monitoring. Deficiencies in internal control. This is a management issue where AG highlighted that the leadership was not always effective in this function, as evidenced by the misstatements that were identified in the annual report, including non-compliance with PFMA. There is an on the SIU investigation into the CASP at the time of reporting by AG, which was 31st July 2021. The outcome of the SIU report was pending. I won't go into this. More on the discussion, it basically summarizes what has already been said in under the programs and also what the committee has highlighted during the briefing sessions with the department. Can you go, Mr. Manager? In terms of human resource management, I think what we would like to highlight here is the delays in the finalization of the fit for purpose structure. I think this was reported last year already that the department was in the process, but it looks like there are still delays with the finalization and approval of this fit for purpose structure after the macro structure was reportedly approved. This we highlight because, members, it has been repeatedly cited as a reason for the department not being able to fill some vacancies and also charging some of its functions in terms of service delivery plans. And one of the issues, so can you go down a little bit? Thank you. Was also this is in terms of non-compliance with legislation and regulations, and also linked to lack of consequence management in the department. I think this was also raised by members, where senior managers of the department didn't sign performance agreements until the 31st of October. And by that time, only 73% have signed. And by the end of the financial year, 81%. That's senior management level, which posed a serious problem, particularly in terms of accountability and consequence management. And the department attributed the challenges to COVID-19 and major departments. And also one other issue that was flagged out was the protracted process of finalizing disciplinary proceedings, where out of 107 misconduct cases, only 36% was finalized by the end of the year, while the rest are still pending. COVID was also cited as a challenge. The vacancy rate remains high at 15.7%, and this also is why there's a high expenditure in terms of compensation of employees, because the department hasn't been able to fill most vacancies, partly because of the restrictions that we posed and also the delays in the finalization of the fit for. So in this instance, it has prioritized some critical posts as well as senior management. And members will note that for the past financial year that we are reporting on, the DDG, I mean the DG position also became vacant, with the DDG acting in the position. However, the members noted that that position has since been filled, but there are some vacant DDG positions as well. In terms of service delivery, as members, we note the misalignment between the utilization of the budget and the achievement of planned targets was highlighted. Also noting that the performance targets were revised when after the adjusted budget. So most of the initial targets were either removed or were adjusted down. So in this regard, it would have been expected that department at least would have performed much better, having fewer targets than initially planned. So although it used 92% of the budget, it only managed to achieve 59% of planned. This table just gives a summary of the achievements of targets. Here, the worst performing program being administration, at zero achievement as it achieved both the planned targets, and followed by program three, which gets the largest share of the departmental budget. Only achieved 5 out of 10 projects, less than 40 achievement, and land administration, half the planned. Can it go down? As already indicated, this program didn't receive the unqualified audited reports as a result of the requalification for the former DAF, but the former Department of Rural Development unqualified opinion. The second target being the payment of invoices, 100% payment within 30 days. In this regard, the Department of Budget and the member also highlighted the problem with this, which might lead to a planning side of, and further highlighted the negative that late payment of it has on the suppliers and service providers, particularly small, medium enterprise. The program two, the long name, the department achieved 67% of the planned targets. Can you go down this program? And one of the targets that the department did not achieve, and this is not the first time, this is a continuing challenge, the Kawana Fasoyad program, which is part of the livestock development, particularly for smallholder farmers. And the reason was the delays in physical mobilization due to COVID-19 restrictions. In this case, members, just want you to note that the Governor Fatsuya de Homo is also implemented by the ARC. So it is interesting to know that the ARC did achieve, it actually overachieved its target for the KYD program, despite COVID-19, while the side restrictions on gathering hasn't achieved. And also the department managed to do capacity building. So I just here want to highlight that the disjunction between some programs being not achieved because of COVID-19. Meanwhile, there are other programs that were achieved despite COVID-19. And in this program, the capacity building of 120 smallholder producers on crop suitability was achieved during lockdown. And another key target that was not met under this program was the establishment of biosecurity coordinating structures in the 5 provinces that are listed. This is an important program in light of the ongoing disease outbreaks challenges, particularly FMD, and members will note that this hasn't been resolved. As much as the FMD was first reported in 2019, Popo, and after that outbreak, the department assured the community that the outbreak would be successfully controlled. However, it did, as members will recall from past briefings, it did spread to other areas in the province and also Pala province. Next program. Program 3, as previously indicated, only achieved 8% of planned targets. The main contributing factor here being the inability to assist 50,000 subsistence producers, and also the number of farms supported through land development support program. In terms of the land development support, it did manage to assist about 113, I think, farms, and only three not be assisted. In terms of security, as previously alluded to, that was the PC under expenditure in respect of the PC, as only the department managed to finalize the verification in the new financial year. Poor planning in terms of policies was also highlighted by the committee. The national policy on comprehensive producer development support, as we recall, has been under development for a while. In the previous financial year, 2019-20, the policy was supposed to be submitted and approved by cabinet. However, this hasn't happened. Department attributed this to the long process of engagement. Can we go down, please? I'm not sure if Dr. Malenjo wants to highlight some issues under land reform and restitution. Dr. Malenjo.
Thanks, yes. Not much to highlight here, except to, I think the point that came quite strongly was the fact that, as you, Ms. Mkashi indicated, that there has been downward revision of the targets. And so in cases where we see targets being achieved, but they were very low target, and I think that's where some of the members were saying, but hang on, even with the achievement of targets, the pace at which we are going, it's going to be very difficult to meet a large number of people with land need. However, the question then is also about the budgets, to say that even the budget has been cut over time. So there's not enough budget. The targets are low. So it's a problem. So yes, they are able to allocate more land than they were planned, than was planned. But the question is the rate. And also the committee also noted and welcomed the allocation of state land during the financial year, although it did not meet the target. I think important also is to note the beginning of the settlement of labor tenants application in line with that last matter. Also not meet the target. And the issue is here is also the delays with settlement agreements and valuations, as we discussed. The support to CPAs, especially general meetings and submission of annual financial statement, was something that the department was beginning to, for instance, you can see that they actually exceeded their target of 394 by reaching about 455 CPAs. So what's interesting is while the department says, well, in some cases we are not able to meet targets because of COVID, but in some cases, even under the COVID prevailing circumstances of limitations to number of people you can meet or restrictions to travel, they are still able to exceed certain targets. The concern was really about areas where there has been no movement. For example, the Trankra area, the transformation of certain rural areas, particularly in the Northern Cape and the Western Cape. And it really affects those former colored areas, which were meant to be transferred to the residents in those areas. The discussion in this program is about rural development, which again also the report was that it was also affected by the COVID-19 and related restrictions with regard to travel and gathering. And we've seen some targets being removed or reduced. It's, for instance, with regard to infrastructure projects, however, in terms of the performance, they managed to exceed the target by 21 projects. NARISEG as well, it managed to meet the targets by recruiting 1,126 youth, 10 more youth than they had originally planned. They reported these initiatives, as was reported, they managed to create jobs for youth women. However, I think the concern here could be that 9%, again, there's issues with this, 9% of the total people that were recruited were women and 30 being youth. I think the numbers are still very low. So the question that I think came from the committee in part of the discussion is to, are we seeing the benefit out of these initiatives and the narratives? Yes, there's recording of numbers, but what are the long-term, impact really? And whether this idea that we will create, will contribute, or the department will contribute to creation of sustainable rural communities, is it something that we are able to assess and measure? And that's something that cannot be resolved here, but it's a long-term issue that the department must continue to think about. You can proceed with the economic development, trade and marketing.
Next page, please. Program 5, which has also one, also revised and you can go down, Dr. Manenji, which has also revised downwards and removed some of the previously planned targets. Managed to achieve 7 out of the 8 from the revised targets. And these were mostly reports on trade agreements and international engagement, which I assume were mostly virtual, and also the applications on AgriBee, the processing and finalizations of those applications were also achieved. The only target that this program didn't achieve was the development of the draft marketing of agricultural products amendment bill, the MAPA bill, which has been under development for a few years, but hasn't been finalized. The department says it was still doing consultations with the Office of the State Law Advisor. In terms of the reports, I think that has also been previously highlighted under this program, the need for further engagement on how these international agreements and engagements that the department undergoing under the program, are the benefits to whom do they accrue and how, particularly in terms of smallholder produce.
So yes, just with land administration, as discussed above, we know it deals with the geospatial information, all the cadastral surveys, deed registration, and planning. And special planning, and it's about really supporting sustainable land development. It achieved 3 of the 6 revised annual targets, so it's about 50% of performance rate. One of the critical issues, and I think over the years, the committee will remember that there was the plan to transition from the manual lodgement at the deeds to an electronic deeds registry system. And the report said that phase one of that is of EDRS. It could not be finished because there was no adequate funding. So it means that the legislation that is in place once more will be delayed. And I think one just notes here and say, given the fact, I mean, the pandemic, the COVID pandemic just showed us how important it is basically to move with times and introduce new technologies. And with the conditions, with the COVID-19 conditions, I think this office was one of those places that was affected, affecting even its turnaround times. Had we had an electronic system, I think a lot could have been avoided. So the next thing was about the plans to have that land administration legislative framework approved. It was also postponed. I mean, the main reason being budgets, that it wasn't enough. And the targets on CPAs already reported it above in program 3 where it was moved. And the fact that the land administration legislative framework was postponed because of budget reprioritization. So we are yet to see the impact it will have on the approval of the land administration framework bill for 2021-2022. Yes, go ahead. No, sorry.
Okay, thank you. In terms of this is just a summary of the discussion, so I won't, I'll just highlight some of the key issues that the members had discussed and highlighted. As all previously indicated, when we started with the program performance, is the lack of alignment between the use of financial resources and the actual performance, wherein members indicated that even when targets have been achieved, for example, in program 4, that's rural development, and as Dr. Manenja has just alluded to, and also program 5, trade and marketing and economic development, the impact on service delivery is not evident. I think in those cases, more extensive oversight will be required. And also the persistent challenges in terms of usefulness and reliability of reported information, particularly as some of the functions are concurrent. Monitoring and evaluation of department activities and grant utilization in terms of transfers to province becomes quite crucial. And also can you please go down? Yes, thanks. And also the reason that has been cited, and in terms of, as we've already mentioned, there are instances where the department will exceed targets or manage to achieve the targets, even during a COVID-19 lockdown. And then on one hand, in some programs, there will be instances where targets were not achieved during lockdown. I think members did go to great lengths and also emphasize and highlighted the fact that the reason can't be acceptable at all, particularly as if members recall from level 3, for most of the past year, the financial year under review, the country was interchangeably between level 1 and level 3, and level 3 being the highest alert level, I think, from June. So gatherings were allowed, including domestic travel. And during that period, parliamentary committees managed to do oversight, including this committee managed to perform oversight visits and even physical public hearings in some instances. So the reason for COVID-19 lockdown being cited as the reason for inability to carry out certain functions was also not fully acceptable to the committee. And also the delays in the finalization or approval of the national policy on comprehensive producer development support, given the importance of the policy and the fact that the members have highlighted the need to integrate the support programs of the former departments for subsistence and smallholder farmers, including land reform farmers. So these delays, they just showed a lack of agency on the part of the departments to the needs and the challenges that are faced by these farmers. An issue which the committee felt has been illustrated by the inability to utilize the COVID, the PESI fund that was supposed to assist farmers affected by COVID, because that was a disaster. So in addressing and assisting farmers, there had to be some urgency in that, and also in light of the food security challenges that farmers faced because of the pandemic. This section six is an overview of the entities. As members will recall, the Agricultural Research Council received, I think, for the fifth successive year for 2020-21, a qualified audit opinion. And the major issue here is that this qualification, it's a repeat finding on material statements in respect of property, plant and equipment. This is a major issue that was raised by members. And the ARC couldn't correct the material misstatements that were highlighted by AXA, hence the qualification. And also noting that the ARC has a number of campuses, I think that's what they are called, institutions in different provinces. So the management of its asset register and these properties is quite crucial. This was a serious concern for members. However, the AXA did acknowledge the fact that most of the findings from prior years have been addressed, including applying consequence management where irregular and fruitless expenditure was reported. And the ARC also further reported that investigations have been concluded and resulting in two dismissals actually during the past financial year. However, there's still a challenge with expenditure management because the entity did incur irregular expenditure of 2.5 million in the year under review, but no fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is an improvement from previous. Next page, please. There's been improvement in terms of achievement. This I would highlight again, members, as the department attributed lack of achievement to COVID, and members will notice that some of the entities, despite the COVID, they did manage to improve performance in terms of blend. The ARC achieving 70% of the planned targets, and while previously it only achieved 58%, so a slight improvement, including the overachievement of the KYD targets in terms of support to smallholder livestock. Can you go down, please? Can you go up a little bit? Members also highlighted here in terms of performance, the major concern, despite some of the improvement, but the fact that the ARC didn't achieve all the vaccine, all the targets that are related to the FMD facility, including vaccine product. For example, it planned to produce 50,000 doses of the FMD vaccine and also develop different types of vaccines, and none of these targets were achieved. This is a major problem in light of the FND challenges that the country already faces, as already been alluded under the department's program too. And also the fact that the ARC, after citing constraints, financial constraints in terms of the going ahead with the construction of the FMD facility, it has since 2019-20 received an amount of 422 million from National Treasury for the medium term for the construction of the FMD facility. And previously it reported lack of progress in this regard to delays in the appointment of project managers and all that. So again, in the year under review, the ARC hasn't moved in terms of the construction of the facility and subsequently couldn't produce the vaccines, especially the FMD doses as planned. The entity had a vacancy rate of 9.7, slightly less than 10%. So it's in the acceptable range. However, it identified 100 priority positions out of the 227 vacancies, and only 23 of the priority positions were filled by the year by the end of the financial year. And also, as much as the vacancy rate might be on the acceptable range, the major concern is that 17% of those vacancies are of qualified professionals. That's researchers and research technicians, which are the core of the entity's operations. And 12% were in senior management. And from at the executive management level, there was a vacancy for the group executive for research and innovation system, which is also a major concern. That's because that's what the ARC about. It's about research and innovation. So if it doesn't have an executive at that level, then that somehow impacts on its ability to raise external revenue using research. Also, the entity since November last year, there was a vacancy of the group executive for human resources and legal service. Also another major issue as it impacts also on the prioritization of filling of vacancies and compliance with HR and SAM issues. The CEO position became vacant from the 1st of August. However, the board reported that they are in the process of filling the CEO. The OBP members are reminded that the OBP does not receive a government grant like the ARC or the NAMC, but it funds all its operations from self-generated revenue, that is the sale of vaccines and other related biological products. Notably, and which was also commended, the OPP managed to increase its revenue by 35% in the year under review. And this was attributed to the increase in sales resulting from demand of OPP services, particularly from foreign countries. However, the OPP spent very little on the GME facility, and I think this will be explained when I get to the department's the entity's performance. Can you go down, please? The entity received an unqualified audit opinion with material findings, little change from the previous two financial years, so the audit outcomes remain stagnant, with repeat findings on non-compliance with the PFMA, the SCM processes, and also poor expenditure management, which all stem from internal control. Irregular expenditure increased significantly from 2 million to 9 million in the year under review, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure was still relatively high at 7.4 million. At 4.9 million, which is slightly below the 7.4 million from the previous year. However, the committee appreciated the fact that the consequence management has been implemented and to prevent poor and wasteful expenditure. However, there's still a need for interventions in light of budgetary constraints that the entity has in finishing the modernization of the good manufacturing practice facility. The OBP also reported that through its consequence management responses in respect of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there has been some dismissals and there are ongoing investigations on some cases, while some have been referred to the South African Police Service. Go down, please. Targets. The performance of the entity in terms of targets remains unsatisfactory. In the previous year, it received 36%. In the current year, slight improvement, but still less than 50%. It only achieved 44% of the planned. And most notably, that's the 100% completion of phase one and 50% completion of phase two of the GMP facility, which is quite central in the operations of the entity in terms of vaccine production and its competitiveness. The non-achievement was attributed to lockdown restrictions and also a dispute with one of the suppliers, which has been referred to legal. One of the key issues in the entity was the high vacancy rate of 26%, with 21 of the vacancies in the clinical unit and 28 in the operation unit. And this was raised as a concern as well, in light of the mandate and the nature of work that the OPP does. The members also noted that the poor performance might also be linked to instability at senior management level, as the committee will recall the CEO, I think, hasn't been in with the entity for 18 months and was suspended by the board. And there are investigations that are being made following a number of allegations against. And additionally, the entity also did not have an HR manager, and this manifested in the performance of the Human Resource Management Development Program, which was the worst performing program, with the entity not achieving all three of the planned tasks for HR. The NAMC gets a grant, parliamentary grant through Program 5, that's 47.4 million, and little change from the previous year in terms of the total grant. However, in the current year, it also raised 27 sorry, from other income and sponsorships, and also 2.8 million from interest. The entity spent 75 million of the total budget of 81 million and had ended the year with a surplus of 2.3, which is an improvement from the prior year where it ended with a deficit of 1.9. The entity received an unqualified audit with repeat findings, similarly to the OPP. There has been little improvement in terms of the audit outcomes, as the entity submitted financial statement late, and also there's non-compliance with SCM, poor expenditure management and consequence management stemming from internal control deficiency. Go down, please. The total irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure combined has been 30 million in the year under review. And most notably, the majority of this is a repeat, is a reoccurrence or a repeat finding, because 25 million out of that 30 is a result of contravention of SCM processes in respect of the National Red Meat Development. That was the case in the previous financial year as well. I just wanted to highlight. And the AG also drew attention of the committee to a preliminary report that was issued on the 1st of February. This is in respect of suspected fraud, corruption, and conflict of interest on the procurement and contract management related to the agriculture and agro-processing master plan. This plan is still, it's been highlighted as one of the key policies of the department. It's still under development, and it was commissioned by the minister to the NAMC. So the committee need to follow up on the board's implementation of the recommendations regarding the investigations into the suspected corruption regarding the NAMC achieved all its planned targets. Just like Program 5 of the department, most of the targets are reports. And the committee has also praised the fact that this posed a challenge in terms of assessing whether the NAMC has actually achieved what it set out to do. And also bearing in mind that the NAMC also gets commissioned by the department to coordinate and implement some of its programs. For example, the National Red Meat Development Program, which incurred 25 million irregular expenditure. The appointment of the new chief financial officer and the new board was welcomed by the committee, hoping that this will lead to an improvement in audit outcomes. The PPECB also does not receive a parliamentary grant, and like the OPP, it generates its own revenue through fees and levies that are charged for inspections on perishable products and also issuance of export certificates and laboratories. So the entity's revenue increased by 12% in the year under review, and the entity realized a surplus of 23 million. And that's also an improvement from the previous year, 4.7 million deficit. The PPECB, as has been the case for the past decade or more, received a clean audit from independent members. Are just reminded, the AG opted out of auditing the PPECB from 2018-19, so it's currently audited by an independent external. The entity most notably also did not incur any irregular place and wasteful expenditure in the can go down, please. It also improved on the achievement of the targets despite the reported COVID-19 restrictions, achieving 86% compared to 71% in the previous year. Go down, please. The South African Veterinary Council appeared for the committee for the first time. Can you please hold it there? Here, I just want to highlight, I won't go into details, what the SAVEC is. It's different from other entities and that it's not direct service delivery. It's a statutory professional body. However, it does accounts to the minister as it was established in terms of the Veterinary and Paraveterinary Professions Act of 1982. It regulates these professions in the country, and its core functions are listed below. Next page, please. The SAVEC's income mainly comes from membership fees that veterinarians and paravets professionals pay that are registered as per the Act. Veterinarians and paravets have to register with SAVEC to be recognized or to be able to practice as such in the country. The entity also raises income from interest and also authorization fees and inspections of facilities where they have to approve, for example, veterinary laboratories and also student registration. By the end of the financial year, SAVEC had 6,455 professionals that were registered as vets and paravets, and also 800 persons that were authorized to perform veterinary and paraveterinary professionals. SAVEC also received a clean audit from independent audits, and it also achieved the planned targets for the year. One of the notable programs that SAVEC has, in addition to its regulation mandate of the profession, is to mentor. It has piloted from 2019 a mentorship program for the compulsory community service veterinary. This it implements jointly with the South African Veterinary Association with funding that was received from the Health Workers Sector Education Training Authority, HWCTA. It reported that by the end of last year, 27 mentors have been trained, and there has been much interest, both from mentors and mentees, which are CCS veterinary graduates. One of the challenges that SAVEC has reported also in the last parliament is with the TOPS permit system of the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, where veterinarians are expected to apply for a permit every time they have to work or on threatened or protected species. Those are species like rhinos and leopards and other wildlife that is threatened or protected according to environmental law. However, SAVEC reported that some progress in this regard has been made, and the regulations have been amended to make it easier for vets to be able to work on this threatened or protected without permit. Land reform entities. Next page.
Okay, so these are entities in the department. Where are we? Responsible for land reform work. One is the commission. One of the things that the commission is always being criticized for is the slow pace of settlement of land claims, those that were lodged before December 1998. And that is important to fast track settlement of those claims before the commission can then process the new claims that came after 1998. And there's a court order actually interdicting the commission to process new claims. So the response was to then come up with a range of initiatives, one being Kuyasa, Project Kuyasa, in order to improve the business processes and systems that could potentially reduce backlog of settlement of claims and develop new financial and settlement models. And again, issues around the autonomy of the commission. So the key issue really to report in terms of the performance here is the slow process or that the commission is undergoing to achieve its autonomous status in line with the founding legislation. So in terms of the report, we know that the commission has developed and submitted for further processing business case, which details the proposed design and cost implications. It's yet to be seen as to whether the commission will get all the money it needs to achieve its autonomous strategy. I'm not too sure what I'm doing now. Okay. So that is the key issue there. The report also shows that the commission also benefited in terms of the state land release project, which contributed about 120 properties that, is about 24,000 hectares that were transferred under restitution. And that takes into consideration the fact that there were also other properties that were transferred previously. Again, issues of COVID and the revision of targets and budgets was cited as a contribution to maybe not achieving some of the target, because as members are aware, to get community resolutions, you need to go to community meetings. To form legal entities, you need to go there to sign settlement agreements. You need to get people together. But as we indicated, the argument being raised here to a large extent, it's problematic because there was also time where the commission could catch up for the time lost during that strict lockdown. And the targets have been decreasing over time, and which is a concern, leading to the question about when will the commission really settle all the outstanding 7,849 pre-1998 land claims. The Office of the Valuer General, the committee again welcomed the work that is being done to review the PVA, the Property Valuation Act, and the work that's being done guided by the Interministerial Advisory Panel on land reform. I meant the recommendations. And the work being done emanating from the recommendations of that panel. Really, here it's about responding to the critique that was observed over time, where there was, in a way, I would say, tensions with other programs where everybody was blaming the OVG for delays in meeting targets for acquisition and redistribution or restoration of land because of the work that OVG has done. So it's about the role, mandate, and valuation method that needs to be achieved. So it achieved it's 5 of 9 targets. The committee was concerned that targets on valuations were not achieved, and that this is the core mandate. With regard to backlog claims, 68% instead of 100% targets was achieved. It also took 3 working days to issue evaluation instead of 50. And I think this has been an improvement, because in the past it was taking about 117 days. And we think, even though it is not a target, but the progress really is commendable. But it's still suffering from the capacity issues, not only in terms of filling in the vacancies, but legislation and policies that we highlighted above. Its annual expenditure was at 44.9 million, which is about 45% really. And so it had a balance. Unfortunately, that's money that it cannot keep. It has to be sent back to Treasury unless it applies and get authorization to retain that money. So the Auditor General gave them an unqualified opinion with findings. And again, sadly, it's a regression because it had been audited previously. The Ingwenyama Trust Board, we do not go into details here, but we do show what the Ingwenyama Trust Board is and what it does, and that the fact that it received 22.2 million from government, which, I mean, that mainly if you record what was being said when it briefed the committee, it was that it is not enough. That's why it had to augment it by the funds from the trust, including the 10%, which is about 4.9 million from the trust and the revenue that is permitted to use for administrative costs. So we therefore note that the tabled annual report did not contain financial statements for the trust, and the explanation provided was that they submitted the report late, and there was ongoing work with the Auditor General to audit the report. And the committee never realized that there's such an interconnection between the work of the ITB and the trust that actually in the actual work it's inseparable, because the ITB accounts for the trust. There was no way that the committee could assess performance of the trust board without looking at the trust, its finances and all that. So the committee therefore resolved just to note the report of the ITB and requested that the ITB must table a comprehensive report that includes the financial statement of the trust. It is then that the committee will consider the report. Trading accounts under land reform is the agricultural land holding account. It's where they acquire strategically located land for agricultural productivity under the program that is commonly known as PLAS, Proactive Land Acquisition Strategy. This account has a track record of spending 100% of its transfers from the department. However, during this period, the period under review, there was a significant decrease from 1.6 billion in 2019 to 448 million and this current the year under reporting, which this decrease, I mean, it impacts negatively on the amount of hectares that can be acquired. It recorded a decrease in revenue as well when compared to the estimated budget, yet the expenditure increased by 41.5 million. It received a qualified audit opinion this in 2021 because of inadequate process to assess and account for grants paid to farmers through the land development support program and those funds that were used for recapitalization and development. And the Auditor General also reported that there were no effective and appropriate steps taken to prevent any regular expenditure of 13 million that was incurred under the LDSP. So, I mean, also the committee expressed concern and noted the lack of adequate monitoring and oversight to ensure compliance with legislation. I think these are some of the issues that we've already discussed above. The DIS registry account, again, it's responsible for DIS registries and the public register of land. And how it gets its money is when they charge clients for registration of deeds and sale of deeds information. There was an increase in revenue by 99.9 million if you compare against its budget. And the grant of it had budgeted a grant of 358 million. So again, I mean, it's worth noting that the committee also, you know, welcomed the surplus of declared of 93 million when it's compared to last year where it had a deficit of 80 million. The concern again was the EDRS project, which has been postponed, and the fact that this was going to improve in service delivery at the deeds. However, that was not so because of lack of financial resources and other things. I'm going to go quickly to, I realize time, we've been on this report for too long now. In terms of time, we may be running behind schedule. So I'll go quickly through the observations. And for the department, and one first observation is the underspending by the department, which resulted in the department surrendering 1.3 billion to National Treasury's Revenue Fund. This is of particular concern because this is of particular concern in that compensation of employees, particularly when you look at the host of capacity challenges that most of the programs or some of the programs in the department experience. Lack of consequence management for employee transgressions, both in terms of performance and revenue management. And the department incurred the historic, both in the former DAF and Rural Development and Land Reform, irregular expenditures of 203 million and fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 44.5 million. And mainly being about non-compliance with SEM procedure, and reports doesn't show any consequences for officials responsible for those. One of the other observation is delays in the development and finalization of the mesh departments fit for purpose structure. During the year under review, again, that was really compounded by the fact that the vacant position of the accounting officer, it really affected accounting accountability, both in terms of finance and service delivery form. The appointment of accounting officer in this year, that the current financial year, was a welcome development, and the committee expressed kind of relief and expectations about how the new accounting officer must act to improve performance of the department. The committee also spoke about or observed the inadequate internal control structures, which are inadequate, as just said, to prevent and detect fraud and effectively address incidences of fraud identified in the department. Again, Ms. Nkashe went in detail to talk about all these and the, you know, week in year monitoring and reporting in respect of progress on planned performance targets. In a way, if you think about this, some of these, the failure to achieve targets, if there was a very strict in-year monitoring, could have been avoided because there will always be catch-up plans being developed and reports about implementation of those catch-up plans, especially in the year under review where there was hard lockdown. One would have expected that at the end of the easing of the lockdown, when we could, you know, as we were in level 3 and down, that the department would then act full steam to respond to some of those outstanding works. The committee observed lack of urgency and poor response to the plight of destitute subsistence and distressed smallholder farmers, as illustrated by challenges and transgressions in the implementation of the COVID-19 Relief Disaster Agricultural Support Fund. And the Auditor General raised, the special report of the Auditor General raised these issues. It observed also, the committee misalignment between budget utilization and service delivery performance, as 92.4% of budget was utilized, but only 59% of the planned performance target were achieved. Delays in the development and finalization of important legislation and policies that were meant to be processed and finalized in the year under review. A MAPA bill, a national policy on comprehensive producer development support, as well as the long-standing communal land tenure policy and the communal land the increasing budget cuts and downward revision of targets, both because of limited available resources, hampers efforts to accelerate trading of land, discussed this. And despite an increasing pressure to redistribute land to the poor, the redistribution and state land release project has not released much land as anticipated. And a large number of released land was confirmation of land already owned by farmers communities. In some instances, when they attempt to reallocate such land, it gives rise to conflict within communities. Should show what happened there. This point, I'm not going to raise it. It relates to the issue about communal policy, redistribution bill, and others that were discussed above. It's the same observation. The observation around the EDRS, electronic deeds registration system, it continues to hamper the deeds office to function optimally using available technology that makes easier to lodge a registration electronic. And such initiative would have made a huge difference during lockdown when deeds offices were closed for public access. And faster transitioning to electronic lodgement could potentially improve systems of deeds registration and turn around time. Ms. Nkaja will again take us through these entities' observations, and then we will then move straight to recommendations. Thank you.
In terms of the ARC, the main improvement the observations was the improvement in addressing some of the previous audit findings, including the implementation of consequence management, while also ensuring that the entity did not incur fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the reporting year. The second one, the committee noted that despite the improvement on previous findings, the audit action plan did not adequately address root causes, which manifested in the successive qualified audits on repeat findings and non-prevention of regular expenses. Appreciation of the improvement in the entity's financial viability, members will recall, in the previous years, there has been uncertainty about the entity's financial viability. However, with some improvements and in the revenue generation, there's been some improvement, but concern with overall revenue management and non-achievement of targets relating to FMD facility and vaccine production. Also concern with vacancies and executive management, as alluded to, as well as critical positions, as all these are central to the ARC's stability and optimal performance. In terms of the OBP, the stagnant audit outcomes remain an issue that needs attention. However, consequence management and the investigations that have since been undertaken on transactions come. Internal control deficiencies in respect of revenue management, these were previously highlighted by AXA as non-compliance with the PFMA and SM continue. This one is linked to the next one, with the highlight on the irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure of 13 0.9 million that was scared. And with appropriate internal control, this could have been prevented. Therefore, this needs attention. Dissatisfaction also with the poor performance of the OPP on plan targets, although the increase in revenue from vaccine sales and improvement in production efficiencies was commended. Lack of progress in the completion of the GMP facility remains a concern. The need to finalize investigations against the suspended CEO and prioritizations of the appointment HR manager. Appreciation for the department's intervention to ensure that provinces procure vaccines and other relevant products from OPP. For the NAMC, again, the fact that there was no improvement in the audit outcomes was highlighted. The combined irregular, fruitless, wasteful and unauthorized expenditure of 30 million remains a concern, as particularly has already been highlighted, the 25 million due to contravention of SCM on the NRMDP program. The need for the NAMC to link actual service delivery to plan targets, bearing in mind that most of its performance targets are report-based. The last one is the appreciation for the appointment of the board and the CFO. PPECB, it's basically an acknowledgement and commending its track record of maintaining clean audits, including the improved performance on plan targets, despite challenges associated with COVID-19. The commission, the main one is the delay on the finalization of the autonomy of the commission, which impacts the implementation of strategies that are put in place to fast track a settlement of lien claim. The court order to refer matters that the commission cannot finalize, it was recognized that this will put pressure on the lien claims due to limited number of judges to hear such case. The committee also observed that since the majority of outstanding land claims involved large tracts of land, some of which are claimed by community, so the committee will require capacity to conduct. I think this should be the commission, not the committee, to conduct credible research that will meet the 2023 deadline. The OVG, the impact of the increasing pace of redistribution, speedy delivery of land that meets land needs of a large number of people may require a shift to district or area-based approach for redistribution. Further, the review of policy and legislative instrument, including bureaucratic red tape, this will affect finalization of settlement agreements and property evaluations by OPP. The recommendations, the first one is to fast tracking of the finalization of the fit for purpose organization structure of the department, particularly to ensure that the planning, monitoring, and evaluation functions are strengthened, as the weaknesses in these functions have contributed significantly to the unsatisfactory performance, delays in verification of performance information, and repeat audit finding performance information. Next one, please. Prioritize. The minister should ensure that she prioritize the filling of vacancies at SMS level. As much as the committee welcomed the appointment of the accounting officer, still some vacancies at DDG and other critical positions to prevent instability and unsatisfactory performance in the department. Members will recall the poor performance in terms of signing performance contract agreements, particularly by SMS. So in this regard, it is recommended that the minister should ensure that the signing of contracts, particularly by SMS employees, and performance assessments are done timely as required by legislation to improve performance and accountability. Additionally, where transactions occur, consequence management should be up. They ensure that the accounting officer addresses repeat audit findings and reports regularly on the activities of the intergovernmental working committees that are led by DDGs. These were to strengthen IGR between the department and provinces and local governments where cases apply, to strengthen planning as well within the department and also between the department and provinces. Ensure that the department engages with the internal audit unit and the chairperson of the audit committee in reviewing. Members will recall that the audit committee recognized that the effectiveness of the internal audit unit in identifying transactions in terms of audit performance. And the audit committee has also raised this. So the minister should ensure that these engagements continue and the department management make use its internal audit function and the committee in reviewing the improvement plan and also report on this on a quarterly basis. And also, most importantly, to report on investigations and action that has been taken on the reported and identified irregular, fruitless, and wasteful. To submit a detailed report on the implementation of the Presidential Economic Stimulus Initiative. This one was... That was implemented late in this current financial year. So there's a need for a report on that, including a complete breakdown of the utilization of the 1 billion that was transferred to the department and the monitoring and implementation plan. To review the department's international trade agreements, remember in this regard, the department, the performance is in terms of reports. So for members to be familiar with what's entailed in these reports, there's a need for the review of the international trade agreements and protocols continuously, and also submit a report to Parliament on the status of these agreements and protocols and how they benefit the country or the sector, including implementation challenges of some of the agreements, if there are any, and contentious. Explore mechanisms to ensure that the departments speed up the redistribution of land. Members have lamented the slow pace in this regard, and this should also include review of policies and development of legislation such as the Land Reform Framework Act, which is very important in addressing equitable access and proper land redistribution. Finalized policy review. The delay might also be linked to the measure, and the department, the minister should ensure that the Communal Land Tenure Policy and Communal Land Tenure Act, I guess, is supposed to be the bill, in order to ensure compliance with Section 25(6) of fast track the implementation of the EGRS implementation registry, whatever, in order to ensure transformation of this registration in South Africa, and allocation of resources to the projects to ensure that it gets implemented successfully. In terms of the entities, it is recommended that the minister engage with the boards and management of the entities, particularly the ARC, OPP, and AMC, in spite of the stagnant and unsatisfactory audit outcomes, particularly in terms of repeat findings, to ensure that these entities get the assistance of their respective internal audit functions and audit committees to strengthen internal controls in party. Ensure that all entities, with the exception of the PPECB, report to Parliament every quarter on the implementation of the Audit Improvement Action Plan, including investigations and actions on reported and identified irregular, fruitless, and expenditure details. This has been requested from the department, and the same should also happen with the entities, as they have showed similar challenges and transactions in terms of the PFMA. ensure that the board of the ARC fast tracks the appointment of the CEO, which they have reported it's in process, and also other SMS level positions. The board of the OBP should fast track and report on the finalization of the investigations against the suspended CEO and also the appointment of the HR manager. Ensure that the board of the NAMC fast tracks the implementation of the recommendations of the report on suspected fraud, corruption, and conflict of interest respect of procurement for the Agriculture and Agro-Processing Master Plan. Ensure that the autonomy of the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights is realized within the time frames that are set out in the business case that has been developed for the project. And also further ensure that the research strategy finalize all outstanding research. And for the OVG, the minister should ensure that the OVG prioritizes the filling of vacancies at SMS level, particularly the valuer general and the chief operations officer. Members will recall these have been at an acting capacity for quite some time now, and this impacts stability and performance at the OVG. Lastly, the minister should ensure that the ITB tables a comprehensive annual report, including the audited annual financial statements of the trust for consideration by the portfolio committee. Unless otherwise indicated, responses to the recommendations should be submitted to the National Assembly not later than 3 months after the adoption of this report by the NA. Thank you, Chair. Morning, Chair.
Masibulele, Mamqashe, as well as Botobela, Dr. Manenje, for the presentation on the BRRR report. Honorable members, as put to us by the content advisors, the BRRR report. We will now open the session for questions of clarity or comments. Honorable Kape is currently in a village in the rural areas. The signal is low. I don't know if she's kicked out. Honorable Kape, are you still there? If not, let's move to Honorable Chwete. Honorable Chwete.
I don't think she's
is there, but she's muted. Honorable Stain.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank. I want to start by thanking our professional staff that assisted us with putting, I think, everything very concise in a document. Chair, it is always quite difficult to have these meetings, especially when we have them virtually, to concentrate and focus information, having long days. But I am myself happy with the report as we have listened to it here today. Thank you, Chair. I don't have to add.
Thank you, Honorable Stein. Honorable Marshall. Memaso, Honorable Mamun Babama.
Enkosi Chair, ndizocela uba ndingayivuli i-video yam. Chair, I am also very much happy with the report. I would really like to thank the content advisors, the researchers, for the excellent job that they always do in this report. I think they've really outdone themselves with this one. I don't have anything to say, you know, in terms of the content of the report itself. However, I noticed that the report that was sent to us and the report that they are going through are slightly different. I've noticed it first in the numbering. Our numbering is slightly below theirs. To make an example, Section 5 overview of the performance of the department entities, where I started to notice this, is Section 6 is Section 6 in theirs. So it seems as if there is some information that is missing from the report. So could the secretaries please send us the updated report, Chair? Thank you.
Absolutely, Mamun Babama. As you would know, this is a draft and it's work in process. and with also the questions and the comments that will be arising out of this engagement, we will come out with the final draft as adopted by the honorable members. You do know that when we do the adoption, we say we move for the adoption with the changes amended. So take it as work in progress, but I think the content advisors will note that, but let's see what their response will be when they give responses. Honorable Matias, Tate Matias, Honorable Montwedi, the Honorable Kapa.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I'm also very happy about the content and the presentation of the report. It tells me also that a good work has been done. It's only one area which may be a little bit of concern, is that on the part of ITB, it doesn't seem to me that our report is elevating enough the discontent that was voiced by the committee, because almost all members were feeling somehow dissatisfied and felt that a lot has to be done or to be corrected in the area of ITB. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa. Akhbare Priet.
Thank you, Voorzitter. Now, Chairperson, just to reiterate what my colleagues have said, I think once again have gone above and beyond. They really are. I think we'd be lost without them, and I agree with the report. I think.
Thank you, Akhbare Priet. Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the colleagues that have assisted us with this report. Chair, I know that there is a confusion with the pages, but I just want to go to page 14 on 3.4 report of the Auditor General of South Africa. I just want to maybe suggest, because I think it flows, I read and I understand, and maybe, you know, for someone might not really be able to grasp this. The line starts by saying, department received an unqualified audit opinion from the department, from the Auditor General of South Africa, which with matters of emphasis. So first is the department that you must just note there. AG further reported that the forestry function, which previously led to a qualified audit opinion for the former DAF in respect of the accuracy of biological asset, has since been transferred to the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environmental. The AGS drew attention to the following: significant uncertainties in respect of claims worth 1.1 billion that were instituted against the department. And maybe that department must just be clear with regards to, you know, the department. One is unqualified audit, and here you explain the uncertainty, but is named the department. Maybe I just suggest that you just make a distinction between these two departments here, so that there is more clarity. And I think if you look at the impairment, where it talks about the impairment, accrued departmental revenue of so much, so that is it's just clear that which department are we talking about. That's one. The other one is on the comment I wanted to make is on South African Veterinary Council, SAVC. In my document is page 32, where it starts with in November 2019. The line I'm coming to is sentence number 3, where it says, at the end of 2021 financial year, SAVC had 6,455 registered vets and para vets professionals, as well as 800 persons authorized to perform veterinarian and para veterinary professional services. So I think the I like the numbers, but I think maybe, you know, if the colleagues have got the numbers, you know, what was achieved against what, if we may have those comparative figures, you know, we have got 6,455, but what is really the targets that we're supposed to have as the vets that we need to service the country. And also, you know, the 800 person, maybe, you know, if we've got those figures, you know, just to say, you know, against this number, this is what was achieved. Thanks, Chair. I think other than that, I'm happy with the report.
Thank you, Ntate Masipa. Honorable Matias, Honorable Ntate Matias, any other honorable member on the platform whom I've not been able to recognize?
Honorable Master.
Yes, Honorable Master, you were recognized earlier, but you're not on the platform. Please proceed.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. Thank you very much. It's due to network problems, but nevertheless, I would like to say, Chairperson, that one will greet you and all members on the show welcome the report. And one will also say that our official, they did a good job, fantastic work. We are very happy with what they have informed us this morning. I'm joining my colleagues that the report is a true reflection of what we have seen and hear in the meetings. Thank you very much. Only one can emphasize on the issue of Ingonyama Trust and like others have already mentioned that it need to be given more emphasis on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Memato. Honorable members, thanks for your questions of clarity as well as your comments. I think I would also want to appreciate the PRRR report that is put to us by both content advisors, Dr. Manenje, as well as Mam Kashe. I know that both of them have also relied on the assistance and the contribution of our researchers, Mamu Pepetega, as well as Mam Kwabe. We thank them for their contributions and all the staff that have had a role in putting together the Portfolio Committee's PRRR report. Let me also, honorable members, dwell much on the issue of ITB, particularly Dr. Manenje, when speaking to the ITB, says that, you know, they've left some gaps there, which these are the gaps that I think we want highlighted, we want to be explicit on, and we want to be very deliberate in terms of this report. The ITB is totally a disastrous entity, and we cannot, honorable members, continue to entertain its mannerism. I mean, you come before the Portfolio Committee and you don't, you are not able to account and present your financial statements. That is a total disregard of accountability. And this is why it was necessary for us as a committee to ask ourselves the crucial question if the ITB, has it been able to fulfill its mandate? Has it been able to look after our rural communities, particularly those that are living under traditional councils who are located under the Ingonyama Trust land? So in having failed to do so, we raised the question whether this is about high time we look into its successes, and if it has been successful, we then are able to replicate it elsewhere throughout the country. But also that it has, if it has failed in its mandate, then we should rescind it and look for legal advice. our legal advice that would be sought would be to look at if communal land rights tenure would be the substitute to the Ngonyama Trust, which would be more attractive to be implemented in all provinces. And I think that is not coming out as explicit as it was attested in the meeting. And I think we would like to have that incorporated into the PRRR report. Let me pause there, honorable members. We will look for responses from the content advisors, and the researchers also may want to chip in at this point where there are areas they would like to add on. Dr. Manenja, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members, for the comments and questions. Let's start with and we must apologize for these the numbering. So what happened is, after we circulated the report, we looked at it and we found that there's actually inconsistency with the numbering. And we started readjusting it and kind of compressing it to be a short report. That's why you find that it's the numbering and the pages that do not relate with what you have. But indeed, we have asked our colleague Cynthia to circulate the version that we have been reading from. I believe she's going to be, if she hasn't done it already, she will be doing it now. The question of the Ngonyama Trust Board, it's something that we discussed. How far do we go with the report? And we will take guidance from the committee today. How do you want us to report on this? Our assumption was that the committee said to the Ngonyama Trust Board, we are noting your report, but it is incomplete because we are not able to assess how the funds you received from the department and that which you got from as a contribution of the trust enabled you to manage the assets of the trust and also the funds of the trust and the trust itself, because there's no financials of the trust board. And therefore, our interpretation was that, as the committee said, come back with a full report. So our interpretation was that the committee will wait for that report to come and then pronounce itself on what needs to happen. And I think this is where we need guidance. If the committee says to us, now it's fine, put all these things together in this report, we will do so. And we just thought that it would be better if we have a comprehensive report before we even begin to recommend repeal or amendment that already has come up. But if we get a full report of the trust, we thought that it will strengthen the argument around the issues. But maybe we should stop here, Chair, and just get guidance from this meeting. Is the committee directing us to bring all those issues in this report, but still say that we are going to deal with only the financial report of the trust when it's tabled? That's what we need. Maybe you can just confirm that so that we can, information is there. At some point we had it, but we just removed it and say, let's wait for the report to come from the trust.
Dr. Manenja, you're putting the cart before the horse here, in the sense that we have continuously asked for reports and stuff from the ITB, which has failed to submit. Now, we're in a space where we're compiling a report that is to be adopted and put before a parliament. We would not want to have then our work waiting on the assumption that we will receive the financial statements from the ITB to be able to submit a complete and comprehensive report to Parliament. In the absence of those financial statements, are we then saying that the report can be tabled before Parliament?
Can I go, Chair? Yes. No.
Yes, please.
That's not what we are saying. What we are saying is we are submitting a report of all the entities and the department, but noting that we have an issue with the trust board, which hasn't tabled the financial statement of the trust. Therefore, our understanding was that we then do not include what we noted there. It's what it you know, it's just high level stuff that happened when they came to brief the committee. So we just, and as you will see, we end up by saying then the committee resolved that they must then go back and bring a full report, but not to say that we are stopping everything. The committee is proceeding to table this report.
I think if I captured the meeting correctly, Dr. Manenje, is that the ITB, having failed to submit and present its financial report, has led to the committee, honorable members, taking the position that the ITB is no regard whatsoever for the committee. And hence we are together as a collective have made a call to rescind the ITB. I think honorable members can speak to this, because our move to calling for the ITB to be rescinded is based on that they have continuously failed to make submissions on time, to make submissions of their financial statements. And we have never been able to get any accountability for the funds that they collect from the various communities, what they total to. But also those funds, they have failed to disclose to the committee what they are utilized on various communities. I see the hand of Honorable Thapa is up. Maybe he may come in on this.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Just to emphasize on what you are saying to our content advisors, that actually what you are saying is our report. The very situation that the ITB is, and what they've done and how they've performed, is our report. Minus, which means it's minus their financial statements. I thank you.
Thank you. Any other honourable member who wants to come in on the subject?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, Honourable Chwete.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me apologise, Chair. It's a bit windy and it's raining back home. Now I'm struggling with the network and stuff. I will be quick, Chair, so that if I get cut off, I've covered a lot of ground. On the issue, Chair, of the IDP that is at hand, indeed, we, as a committee, we've been experiencing some difficulties in terms of accountability. At one stage, we found ourselves having to force the ITB to abide by the AG's requirements. There was an argument of whether they refused to be audited, that they cannot be held accountable as they are a trust, not audited in a certain way. It's been continuous, Chair. You are correct. There have been this continuous arrogancy displayed by the leadership of the IT. The lack of submitting financial statements on time. There's a lot. Hence, I am rising, Chair, to support to owning up that this is the view of the committee, that indeed there should be consequences faced by the ITB. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chwete. Any other honorable member on the subject at hand? Thank you, honorable members. Dr. Manenja, you may proceed.
No, thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members, for direction. Indeed, so we are going to include a section that reflects the discussion and the unhappiness of the committee in you know, as it transpired during that meeting. And we will address the issue of a need to, or as it's already in the report, that they must bring that financial report, the experience of the committee over its term, and also the question that there will also be a little advice around. So we will include the section on the informal transport. And thank you. Ms. Mkashe will address the two issues that relates to the Auditor General questions and the survey questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chililo. In terms of 4.4 on the AG, I think the distinction will be done, but the assumption was that each section is not read in isolation with the rest of the document. At the beginning of the document, the department that accounts to this committee, for which this report is based, has been written in full. And in brackets, we have its acronym or the department, just to indicate where you see the word the department in the rest of the department, it only refers to the department that accounts to this committee. That's the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. However, to make the members happy, that distinction will be made. In terms of SAVEC, as it has already been indicated when we're presenting the reports, it's a statutory body. It doesn't have, or at least it didn't have in the reporting year, the number of registered vets or para vets that it aims for, because it's not something that is on within their control. It only registered its people because it's mandatory for people who qualify in those professions to register with SAVEC. So that depends on the people. And what that means is that if someone is not registered, they can have the degree or a diploma in those professions, but if they are not registered with SAVEC, they can't practice in that profession in this country. And these numbers were also stemmed from the fact that the members wanted to know how many, there might be more than 6,455 vets in this country, but these are the numbers that are registered with SAVEC as per legislation. And which also means that whoever deals with that, if you go to a vet clinic or vet hospital or whatever consulting room, there has to be a SAVEC certificate, just like with human doctors. So it's a requirement. However, on occasion, I think SAVEC will also report on how many, what they started the year with and how many they have lost. I think they have did some presentation, which might mean due to cases like illness or people no longer practicing or didn't renew their registration or have left the country. I don't know if that responds to the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ma'am Kasha. Honorable members, any follow-up? I see Honorable Masipa has got his hand up. You may proceed.
Chair, thanks. I was just saying I'm happy with the explanation.
Thank you, Dr. Masipa. Any further input, honorable members, or changes you may want to effect on the BRRR report? If not, honorable members, can we have a mover for the adoption of the BRRR report with amendments as effected by honorable members in our discussion?
I don't know how to raise my hand.
Go ahead, honorable Mahlo.
Yes, Chair, I'm here. I stand to adopt the report as presented, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mahlo. Moves for the adoption of the BRRR report with amendments as effected by the honorable members. Any seconder? The Honorable Thapa.
Thank you, Chair. I hereby second the move to adopt this report with amendments as indicated by the committee members. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kappa. Seconds the adoption of the report with the amendments as put by honorable members. We then will request our content advisors and researchers together with the secretariat, our staff, to work into the final report that can then be tabled before Parliament. We now move to our last item, honourable members, which is the adoption of minutes that we've got from the number of meetings that we have held. I think we have four sets of minutes that we would like to ensure we adopt and dispense of today. So let us move to the minutes of the 7th of September 2021. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Thank you, honorable members. Is the mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 7th of September 2021?
Chair Mbabama. Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 7th of September.
Thank you, Honorable Mbabama. Moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 7th of September 2021. And I have a seconder, Honorable Members. Honorable Kaba.
Thank you, Chair. I second the move to adopt the minutes of the 2nd of September. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa. Seconds the adoption of the minutes. Any matters arising, Honorable Members? Page 1, page 2, page 3.
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Tademasipa.
I see you did not note my hand. Page 1,
yeah.
I do note that Honorable Mbabama was at an apology on the day of the meeting.
Oh, my goodness. Are you sure? I withdraw I withdraw, Chair.
Ah, yes. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair. Sorry about that.
No, no. It's all right, Honorable Mbabama. Let us therefore substitute the name of Honorable Mbabama, who moves for the adoption of the minutes. So we correct that. Thank you, Honorable Masipa, for pointing that out.
There are two hands.
Appropriate.
There are two hands of Honorable Stein and Papa.
Oh, Honorable Stein.
Okay, let me have mine down.
Chair, I then propose that we adopt the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Stein. Moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 7th of September. 2021. We have corrected that then, honorable members, as honorable Kapa did second. So we'll keep it as that. We were on matters arising page 3, page 4, page 5. Thank you, honorable members. If there are no matters arising, the minutes of the 7th of September 2021 have been duly adopted. Can we move to our next set of minutes? Thank you. We are on our next set of minutes, honorable members, are the 10th of September 2021, page 1, page 2. That will be all, honorable members. There are two pages on this one. Can we have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 10th of September 2021? Honorable Stein.
Chairperson, thank you. Yes, I adopt, propose that we adopt the minutes of 3 September.
Thanks, Honorable Stein. Moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 10th of September 2021. Can we have a second, Honorable Members?
Honorable Chair, Mimatlo here will second the adoption of the 10th of September 2021 as a true reflection of the outcome of the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Mahlo, who seconds the adoption of the minutes. Honorable members, any matters arising? Page 1, page 2. Thank you, honorable members. If there are no matters arising, the minutes of the 10th of September have been duly adopted. Thank you. Let us move to our second last minutes of the 9th of November 2021. If the secretariat can assist us in uploading the minutes, we are awaiting the minutes of the 9th November 2021. Memaledu, can you assist with the minutes of the 9th of November 2021? That be the minutes of the 12th of November. We are looking for the ones before the 9th of November.
I will get them, Chair. Can we continue with this one? I will so long.
All right. Let us then proceed. Honorable members, we are on the minutes of the 12th of November 2021, page 1. Can you scroll down, please? Page 2, page 3. Page 4, page 5. Honorable members, can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 12th of November 2021?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 12th.
Thank you. Akhbare Breed moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 12th of November 2021. Can we have a second, honorable members?
Chair.
Honorable Papa. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I second the move for the adoption of the minutes of the 12th of November 2021 as the true and correct records of the proceedings.
Thank you, Honorable Taba, for seconding the adoption of the minutes. Honorable members, any matters arising? Page 1.
Chair.
Mr. Masipa.
I note that there are no apologies noted on page 1. I did send my apology because I wasn't in the country at the time meeting.
Yes, correct, Dr. Masipa. Can we request the secretariat to include Dr. Masipa's name in the apologies? Thank you. Any matters arising, honorable members? Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Thank you, honorable members. If there are no further matters arising, I take it minutes of the 12th of November 2021 have been duly adopted. Let us dispense, honorable members, of our last set of meetings of the 9th November 2021. We're still awaiting the minutes of the 9th of November 2021. Thank you. Honorable members, you have minutes of the 9th of November 2021, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8. Thank you, honorable members. That brings us to the end of our minutes of the 9th of November 2021. Can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 9th of November 2021 as a true reflection of the proceedings.
Thanks, Honorable Marshall, for moving for the adoption of the minutes of the 9th of November 2021. Can we have a second, Honorable Members?
I will second.
Thank you, Akhbare Breed, seconds for the adoption of the minutes of the 9th of November 2021. Honorable members, any matters arising? Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8. Thank you, honorable members. If there are no matters arising, the minutes of the 9th of November 2021 have been duly adopted. Honorable members, that brings us to the end of our program for the day. I would like, Akhbare Breed, your hand is going up.
Yes, sorry, Chair. I think on the email I saw minutes for the 16th as well for last week.
Yes, we've had to retract the minutes of the 16th of November 2021, honorable members, as we were not happy with the finishing. So we will revise and adopt them in our next sitting. Thanks for reminding us and pointing that out, Akhbare Breed. So allow us to work on them again as MENCO, and we will present them before the committee in our next sitting. It brings us to the end of our session, honorable members. We therefore want to thank our staff in particular for having assisted us in putting together the BRRR report, particularly to our content advisors, the researchers, our secretariat, and all the staff within our committee. We applaud the stunning work that you continuously do in support of the committee. Honorable members, let me also thank you for having availed yourself today during this session and assisted us to be able to table our report and have it adopted, and for dispensing of the minutes that we have been able to gather over the past meetings. I wish you well on the proceedings of the rest of the day. A kind reminder that there is a sitting at 2 o'clock this afternoon in Parliament, although it will be a hybrid session. Those that are here and attending physically, see you in the House, and those that will be attending virtually, please be in your good behavior, as we often pick up the interjections electronically. We wish you well. Please have a wonderful day ahead and a great week ahead. Send our love and greetings to your loved ones, and may God keep you in under his protection at all times during this COVID pandemic. But do please remember to wear your masks at all times, adhere to social distancing, and sanitize at every given opportunity. The meetings, honorable members, stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Goodbye.
Thank you, Chair.